Hi, and welcome to another episode of Neuro Women Natter. And as usual, I'm Charlie Hart, and my usual co-host, Tony Horn. She has just come back from holiday, so I'm giving her this episode off. And we have the wonderful Beth Thomas with us instead today. So I know Beth from the Professional Speaking Association, and she's now a member of the Neurodivergent Speakers Group that I co-admin with Michelle Mills-Porter. And yeah, it's brilliant to have you, Beth.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm absolutely thrilled to be here. I absolutely love listening to this podcast. It's brilliant.
Would you like to introduce yourself and share a little about your work and the areas that you focus on?
Absolutely, my pleasure. So yeah, thank you so much for the introduction. I'm a neuroinclusion specialist. So that basically means, oh, we've already got old Sam's joining us. Hey, Samantha. Right, focus, inattention in action there. So I'm a neuroinclusion specialist. I focus on supporting late diagnosed or late identifying individuals in understanding the different ways in which they experience the world, need to learn how to understand what their needs are, how to advocate for them, and ultimately how to build a neuroaffirming lifestyle that works to support them rather than work against them. And I do that through coaching, through speaking, and through training. So I absolutely love it. And yeah, it's just a real privilege to have these opportunities to get to chat about it and all of the topics that are within that space.
Fantastic. So I've got to say as well, I'm a big fan of your Instagram and your short form videos.
Thank you so much. It means so much.
They look great. They're really entertaining and insightful, and everyone should follow you. So what's your handle again to follow you? I can't remember.
That is a good question, because I rarely can either. So don't worry, you're not alone.
we'll share it in the chat afterwards. Okay.
Grand.
So this episode, I can't believe we're on episode 11. I picked this topic today because it's something I've had a bee in my bonnet about for a while. And it's about stereotypes. So yes, there's lots of people who talk about autistic stereotypes and how some of them are divisive, some of them are harmful, they increase the stigma, they don't apply to everyone. Same thing with ADHD. And then when you're a woman as well, you can be stereotyped in various ways. So what I wanted to talk about is how we seem to have these stereotypes and tropes and ideas of how women present if they're autistic or ADHD, or maybe not diagnosed or identified with any kind of neurodivergence, but certainly coded that way, and how it happens in the media and TV and film as well. But it's particularly I'm talking about on online. So there are a lot of pieces of content out there about ADHD women and how they must all feel like this and experience this, but you're enough. And I find it more than a bit, sweeping generalizations and a little bit patronizing. And like, can you just please talk about lived experience? So if someone wants to share what it's like for them as being a woman or somebody who was identified female at birth or any other marginalized gender and then neurodivergent, and they want to talk about their own experience, I want to hear more of that, rather than people who are not even in that demographic projecting their observations. Mm-hmm. So you can tell I didn't script this because I'm going a bit around in circles, but it's about not fitting us into a box and understanding the uniqueness. So neurodiversity as a concept, it's acknowledging that every single brain and mind is unique, that we each think, feel, and process uniquely, and that's a valuable part of human diversity. So really, please don't box us into a woman with ADHD or autistic girl box, because that isn't appreciating our uniqueness. Mm-mm. So what do you think about all that? Sorry, that's a bit of an open question, but what are your takes on this?
Oh, Charlie, I'm here for it all day. Amazing. I honestly couldn't agree more. And do you know, it almost wasn't until you started having this discussion and you brought it to the group's attention that I was like, yes, this does infuriate me. And this is something that I have been, you know, both subconsciously and consciously, you know, fighting or challenging or reframing for a really long time. And not only do I think it's kind of frustrating for people who have, you know, gone through that curious journey to perhaps figure out this part of their identity, I actually argue that it's incredibly damaging and limiting to people who have not quite gotten to that part of their journey yet. And I would really put myself under that sort of, I don't want to say classification because that is a bit of a pathologizing term, but kind of it very much limits people's access to being able to get curious. So because I didn't fit into a lot of the stereotypes that we're exploring today, I went through years of compensating and masking and coping and internalizing all of these things that were actually part of my neurodivergence. And the catastrophic impact of that is something I'm still processing today, and I'm still working through today. I'm still unlearning today. So I think it's incredibly damaging to not just kind of have these assumptions, but to also perpetuate them, to not be challenging them. So when we do see content out there, or we are, you know, having training or reading about it, or whatever format this content's coming to us in, if we're not sitting and thinking, that's interesting, why is that in that very rigid box, or why is that describing a very very rigid kind of limiting group of people, if we're not challenging that, I think we're kind of helping to keep those assumptions going. And actually, a large part of the coaching space I tend to notice is about being able to hold a safe space for people to make sense of how that's impacted them as well. So I really try hard to make sure that, for instance, a lot of my content has absolutely no specifications whatsoever, because I know through my experience of having had the absolute privilege, I love what I do, of supporting people. You know, I've worked with inattentive males, I've worked with hyperactive females, I've worked with everything in between. I've worked with non-binary people who have, you know, some resonance with certain aspects that might be stereotypically male, and vice versa. So what I'm really trying to say in a long-winded way, as is classic Beth fashion, is that these things are features of people's experiences that don't have genders.
Absolutely, I agree. One thing I wanted to say, I've got so much to say about this. But one thing is that I don't think that my gender influences my neurotype, but I do think that my neurotype influences my gender experience. Mm-hmm. So when I was growing up, I wasn't one of the girls. I didn't do the girly things, and I didn't wear the girl fashions, and I didn't do the makeup and the clothes and the jewelry. Mm-hmm. I was a tomboy. I did tomboy things. I was interested in bird watching. I did martial arts. I played guitar. So I'm calling them tomboy things. But what I mean really is that my hobbies and interests were kind of, you might find them on a list of autistic interests, the common ones. Mm-hmm. But if you try to divide those interests into male and female, you're not going to find them in the girl interests. There's mm-hmm. this projection that if you're an autistic girl, that you're not going to be interested in Lego and trains. I was interested in Lego and trains. That you're not going to play with matchbox cars and line them up. I did that. But that you'll be more interested in horses. I'm not. Yeah. Puppies and kittens, yeah, there are going to be some exceptions. I love puppies and kittens, but mm-hmm. I'm an animal lover on the whole, but not a girly representation of being an animal lover. I'm more a nature lover, and I think it's a huge privileged to have like actual wild mammals around us and pets in our home who are animals, but they live with us. And there's no gender to any of that, I don't think.
No. And it's not necessarily something we have to apply to that to make sense of it. But it's almost as if we still live in a very rigid sort of world where a lot of people expect that we have to apply gendered expectations to something to be able to make sense of it.
Yeah.
That's something I'd love to be able to challenge, because from my lived experience anyway, that was actually something that created another barrier towards me understanding things. So I was the same as you. So in lots of different ways, I was also a tomboy, but it's also the connotations of what that means growing up in terms of you then being able to accept yourself that I struggled with for so long. So, oh, you're not very ladylike, or, oh, it should be a bit more this or a bit less that. And it created so much anxiety contributed to people pleasing and then challenges with boundaries and advocating for my needs to be met. So the knock-on impact of this is huge. And I think that's another aspect to stereotyping that people often don't think about. Which
absolutely. Yeah. So I just want to share this comment from Sam again. She said, I was a tomboy too. Whatever that means, lol, just not very binary in my expression of self. So that's it. When I was a kid, I identified as a tomboy. I asked people to call me Charlie rather than Charlotte. I've since changed my name to Charlie officially.
Oh, cool.
When I was a kid, I just wanted people to call me Charlie and to treat me like one of the boys and to let me do the boy things, the things that were typically associated with boys. Mm-hmm. So my favorite TV shows were the A-Team and the Dukes of Hazzard.
Oh, cool.
I used to attach little bits of cardboard to the spokes of my bike to make them make a motorbike noise because I wanted to ride a motorbike, and I liked Evel Knievel. Mm-hmm. Cowboys and Indians, yeah, I had a cowboy hat and a cap gun and holster, and then cut my hair short so that I could wear the cowboy hat and it would look right. And my frame of reference for all this was George in The Famous Five. So George, Georgina, that's a female character who didn't want to hang out with her sister doing the girly things like preparing the lavish picnics and things like that. She wanted to go on adventures with the boys and she wanted them to call her George. And that's exactly how I felt. I think if that book was written now, we would probably recognise that that character is a trans boy.
Mm.
But it isn't that I didn't want to be a girl. It's that I didn't want to be confined to doing girly stuff and presenting in a girly way. And I still feel like that now.
Yeah.
And actually, it caused me a lot of dysphoria. And I didn't know at the time that cisgender people could experience dysphoria. But looking back on it now, I recognise it as that. You know, I thought, I'm not very girly. I don't have big boobs. I don't have a tiny waist and wide hips. I have to wear my hair long. I'm going to have to grow my hair long because it's the only girly thing about me. Otherwise, people are just going to think I'm a boy. And that wouldn't bother me now. It's like the worst thing, I'd have to get more professional headshots done if I cut my hair now. But it wouldn't bother me if people thought I looked like a boy.
Yeah. That's really interesting. And thank you for sharing, because I can absolutely imagine that a lot of people are going to really relate to that. That's really powerful to be able to also talk about the dysphoria that created for you. Because again, thinking about it from, okay, what is the impact that conditioning and stereotyping can have? I think that's huge. And not enough people are having a conversation about it. And
I'd just like to share a comment from Cynthia Fortledge, who's a little bit older than us and has grown up kids now. And she said, the stereotypes we are taught as parents of what to watch for meant that we saw our son's ADHD over a decade before recognising my daughter's. And now I see it in myself as it's different. Yeah, we're getting there. This is one of the reasons why I think we need to really say something now about the fact that there's still content being put out there to hundreds of thousands of viewers that perpetuate the stereotypes because it does provide another barrier to diagnosis, which is unhelpful. And if you're a bit weird and a bit gender non-conforming, it can also make you feel dysphoric, or at least like it's another gang that you still can't be accepted within and feel part of. And yeah, that's the last thing we want in the neurodiversity movement. We need to create spaces where everyone feels valid and like they belong.
Yeah.
And we're not going to do that by having all these little boxes.
No, exactly that. Because then it becomes really difficult for us to make sense of our own personal experiences, which, as you said at the start of the session, are all unique and different. So it's kind of is it an oxymoron when it's like, you know, two things can't be true at once? I mean, yes, there's some things that can be true at once, but these two things can't be, right? If we all each have our own unique lived experience, how then is it possible to have a neat, tidy box that multiple people will fit into? That doesn't make sense. And there's another comment, by the way, but Deborah, I was the same. I actually tried brownies, did not get along with it. I was the second ever girl they let into Cubs. A lot more, you know, flexible.
I love that. When I'm a fair bit older than you, so I went to brownies and guides until I got kicked out. But
I mean,
the idea that you can be any gender and go to any of these is just brilliant, especially as it's a religious organization, you know, it's rooted in religion, but they're Christian with a small c, in that they accept everyone, even if you're trans and non-binary and gender non-conforming.
Yeah.
So yeah, Deborah says, I left Girl Guides because it was so boring. I wanted to be on the adventures with the scouts. Yeah. So two things I pull out from that. It's brilliant that Deborah was able to join the scouts, or would be able to now, but also, why do we do the stereotypical female activities in the Girl Guides?
Right. Yeah, exactly. And I think it's really interesting that for a lot of people that want that variation in stimulation and engagement to help them be engaged in things that are of interest to them, feel too confined by, again, the things that are very gender stereotyped. So, for example, when we look at the kinds of activities that things, you know, might be in Girl Scouts, for instance, they're not as engaging, for instance, in comparison to other things, but like because of that really binary and rigid way in which these are for girls and these are for boys, means that a whole host of us who actually find other things more interesting can't access it as easily. And then, to add insult to injury, we're often pulled up on not being engaged enough, being daydreamy, not investing, or not being, you know, not contributing, or not being part of a team, for instance. And it's like, no, it's really, have you ever tried being part of a team when A, you don't feel part of it, and B, it's the most boring thing in the world, and you'd rather metaphorically scoop your eyeballs out with a rusty spoon? Gosh, thankfully, didn't get to join at the time. It just wasn't
so amazing. Deborah, yeah. So like me, was unable to join the Scouts at the time. But yeah, it's great that the younger kids can now, because the other thing to acknowledge is that the younger generations, more of them are coming out as being trans or non-binary, or rejecting gender and gender stereotypes. And certainly all my kids, me and my husband had four kids between us, and none of them fit neatly into the gender binary. And my teenage daughters, as they were, you don't know what gender they are one day to the next, and they both go by any pronouns. So we're very used to like breaking free of the gender binary in this household, and my husband as well. So he doesn't like being constrained with the expectations that society places on men either.
That is incredible. I mean, can you have a
male ally in the audience as well on LinkedIn, saying great conversation, thanks for it.
Oh, thanks, I love Jonathan. That.
Yeah.
Thanks joining us. I mean, I absolutely love that, Charlie. Can you imagine how much more accepting and how less stressful it would be if the world was so much more accepting and accommodating and fluid, and if we were all with that as a default, can you just imagine how much nicer it would just be to exist? Like, people wouldn't have to fear for their safety or for their well-being because there was just a standard of you are welcome to be yourself and you are safe here and we welcome you as you are.
Yeah.
Like, why is that even so difficult? It's sometimes something I get really frustrated about.
Absolutely. Me too. Yeah. And the expectation of who should wear the trousers. Well, my husband wears shorts every day and I'm usually in trousers. Who should be the breadwinner? Whose decision is final? That kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not anything to do with neurodiversity, I know, but just like I want to smash all of that. Mm-hmm. So Samantha, our very pink friend, pink but not girly, yeah.
I love that.
Says people always assume she's very girly because of all the pink, but she's really not. She spends her days, her weekends surfing and walking with no makeup on and hates shopping, yeah. I can't surf, I'm way too clumsy, but I'd relate on all of the rest of it. Just as impulsive and hyperactive as she is distracted and inattentive. Yeah, me too, Samantha, absolutely. Mm-hmm. So it really bothers me that when I went for my ADHD assessment that they gave me a diagnosis of inattentive type ADHD because I know how hyperactive I am. Yeah. And it was just after the pandemic as well, when the thought of only being able to go out once a day and that you're meant to be out for less than an hour. Yeah. And I had to choose between going for a run or taking my kids for a walk. Mm-hmm. Was really difficult for me. Mm-hmm. And I was really worried that they would lock down even further and we wouldn't be able to even do that. Mm-hmm. And I was eyeing the trampoline in our back garden and thinking I'm going to end up doing that instead. I am physically hyperactive as well as in the head. And mm-hmm. I'm just like, I forgot to wear my bracelet. You know, I always wear a bead brace.
Nice.
Bracelet to swim with. I forgot to put it on and I'm wringing my hands. So it's a bit of a hyperactive stim. Yeah. But I am hyperactive. I always have been. The only time I'm not physically active is if I'm depressed.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. And that's really interesting. I actually remember my assessment. So my formal sort of diagnostic assessment actually only took place last year, I think. Last year. Wow. It feels like yesterday and also so long ago all at the same time. But I remember it was with a male psychiatrist who I'm totally honest, said about 45 minutes in, I'd spoken solid about how exhausted I was implementing holistic measures to help me manage my ADHD challenges, which would be so much more severe if I didn't expend so much energy managing them. Almost as if he hadn't heard any of that. And he said, yeah, I've got to be honest, I'm not seeing any features. I'm not really seeing how you're meeting the clinical threshold. And I was like,
yeah.
Did you not just...
This is a huge frustration to me that people observe our ADHD from outside when it's going on inside our schools. You can't see it. It's inside our minds and our central nervous systems. Uh-huh. Yeah.
And I
neurodivergence isn't all in the brain. It's the whole body mind. Yeah. It's the brain and the central nervous system. And they can't observe it because it's inside us. Yeah. So they need to ask us what's going on mm-hmm. for us.
Exactly. And arguably, because of all of the conditioning through the gendered expectations I've experienced for so long, I am able to mask a lot of the features. If we, for instance, and other people that also, you know, really resonate with hyperactive features, did not have any of that conditioning, I can only imagine how differently a lot of our experiences would be with a lot of these different features. So there was a part of me that, you know, kind of almost wanted to like shake the computer to be like, how can you say something so dismissive when you've just heard me talk about the masking and the energy, which, yeah, just baffled me. But there was a comment in the chat that's just come up, which I think is a really important point. So there's a Dan here that said, I'm a cisgender straight male. Ashamed that gender stereotypes will persist and be promoted for as long as straight male insecurity does. I agree. Yeah. Yes, I really agree.
I totally agree. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Thanks, Dan. And I've got Daniel Knob. I'm not going to try and say your last name. I will get it wrong. Right. So Daniel is in Germany, I believe. Cool. And they are a proponent of the double rainbow, and they recognise the link between neurodivergence and LGBTQIA+. Beautiful. So yeah, I knew you'd be here, Daniel. Nice. Yay. To see you. And Agenda Bender, yeah. We say gender fluid a lot in our house, or agender even, but it gets mixed up with agenda and sounds like some boring thing in a meeting.
But, I can see how that would happen, actually. Yeah.
Cynthia's pointing out that these gendered behaviours, like you see in Brownies and Guides, were first written about in the Odyssey. Mm. That's 2,700 years ago. So it's taking a really long time to break free of that. Mm. And she hates the word attention seeking. Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. First diagnosis in high school was so wrong and so lazy of a diagnosis.
Also really interesting that attention seeking is, again, another typically like engineered phrase towards females that for any reason might be stepping outside of that very binary description of, you know, this is what a demure, acceptable, preferable female should look like.
Fuck demure. That's what I say. Right. Yeah.
I mean, you're not, oh, you're attention.
There's many psychiatric labels that are only associated with women. Hysteria, you know, hysterical. There's histrionics and crazy cat lady. Yeah, that's a trope, not a diagnostic label, but it's one that many neurodivergent females get thrown at us.
And yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, actually, should we go through some of those stereotypes? So I'm just going to pull up the document I sent you that I was working on when I was meant to be doing something else the other day. So one I came up with is the wallflower. So this is the thing about autistic girls are always timid and anxious and shy and quiet and introverted. And about that, I'd just like to say that some of us are loud and gobby and love the limelight. I'm an amateur theatre kid. You know, I did amateur dramatics. I've been trying to be in bands for a really long time, and I am now in a band, but I'm now 49. Yeah. So lots of us are actors, singers, comedians. Mm-hmm. We can be speakers and trainers, fitness instructors, teaching big classes, how to do yoga or salsa size or whatever. Mm-hmm. We can be political activists. We can be in bands. Yeah. And I don't think that our gender should hold us back from any of those things. And we get marginalized enough for being autistic without being put in one box and then another as well. So yeah, if I'd printed this off, I would screw it up and throw it out the window, but I haven't. And the next one is the chameleon. So this idea, and this is perpetuated a lot by female neurodiversity influencers, I've got to say, is that we can be chameleons and mirror the behaviours of the other girls around us. And the implication there is the other girls around us are neurotypical, and they might not necessarily be, because we tend to hang out with people that are on our wavelength. But the chameleon mirrors the socially acceptable behaviours of other girls, and therefore you can't see her autism or her ADHD, and she flies under the radar. So yes, masking is a real thing, and so is mirroring, but it isn't universal. Some of us can't blend in, no matter how hard we try. I was always weird and different, even if I tried not to be. And it wasn't long before I decided I didn't want to be like everyone else. I wanted to be a bit more alternative. Mm-hmm. So I personally find it really unhelpful when female neurodiversity advocates push this narrative. I've never been high masking. Yeah, read my school reports, it was evident.
So do you ever find that when you look back at some of that information, you think, wow, I understand why it wasn't picked up on, but how was it not picked up on?
Yeah. I mean, some of it just really bugs me because it's like, give me a break. It's obviously how my brain works. Things like Charlotte would do really well and live up to her potential if she didn't allow herself to get distracted. And I'm reading that thinking, but I was doing things that really mattered to me. Like I was the female lead in Gregory's Girl, our school production. That was super important to me. I used to feed the animals in the biology room at lunchtime, which mattered to me because I'm an animal lover, but it also got me away from the playground bullies. So there were all these things I did that mattered to me. And the reason I did them with intensity is because I was autistic and that's how my mind worked. But the school reports would be implying that I need to do things different in order to succeed. And I just think we should be allowed to lean into our strengths and not be expected to be good all-rounders. Yeah. And I don't see schools learning that. I don't see any change. I think it's particularly difficult for girls.
I think so. And gender fluid individuals as well. Yeah. It's already hard for girls and, you know, in some ways, especially so for people that don't identify with either of those kind of very dominant boxes, I think is so impossible.
This is the thing. So, yeah, I'll just go off down a little tangent. Intersectionality, we have to acknowledge the intersectional angle. And I don't want to speak over members of the global majority, but I just want to acknowledge my privilege and say, yes, I'm multiple marginalized due to being autistic and ADHD and having mental health issues and being a woman and being bisexual. And I could go on, but I'm also a white woman. I'm middle class. I think I've got a roof over my head. I own my own house. I don't live in a war-torn country. So I have privilege. And I think it's really important to understand that there are people who are multiply marginalized and more. So while we're talking about how autism and ADHD presents for women, I think we should be asking what it feels like, the lived experience of women from the global majority, particularly Black women, particularly autistic women who are subject to that angry Black woman trope, because they are so vilified by such a big part of society and they face even more barriers to diagnosis as well. So if anyone knows a good speaker on that, I would really like to, I'd know a few myself, I'll approach some, but I'd really like to acknowledge and present this angle. But without talking over them, because that's the other point. Yeah, you see men talking about this stuff and they don't know everything because it's not their lived experience.
Absolutely. It's a very big reason why I really don't enjoy being described as or describing myself as an expert. I might know a lot and I do, but I will never be an expert because I could never possibly know what it's like for other experiences that I don't have myself. And I think that's a really important thing that industries don't recognize enough. And I think it's a huge responsibility that should be a lot more, what's the word I'm trying to look for? I'm almost kind of reminded of for those people who are in a sense of privilege to take up those big stages and how it's not being, you know, kind of reminded.
It's best practice and there could do with being some guidelines about this. Yeah, if you are a privileged, white, middle-class, affluent person, you shouldn't be able to project your experiences on people who are facing more marginalisation and compounding marginalisation. And I try to remember that. I can't... I need to get more people, more voices heard. So we should be promoting speakers who can provide those perspectives and angles because they're rarely in the room.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's find them.
So I just wanted to read this from another PSA friend, Penny. She says that the effects of perimenopause or menopause on ADHD for her have been dramatic. And the ADHD disappeared in pregnancy. She was really calm. She didn't realise she had ADHD before menopause. Yeah, I was perimenopausal when I realised, but looking back on my childhood, the signs were there. This is something to do, something that a male content provider would have had no experience of. Yeah, which is true. But I would also like to thank the people who run podcasts that get on, the people who are experts and do have the lived experience, because those podcasts are really, really valuable. And I'd particularly like to thank Matt Gutwell and Andrew Jay, who have had so many experts on and so many people who speak from lived experience and clinical expertise or academic research without projecting one experience onto others. So that's a very factual podcast and I really appreciate it.
We were doing the stereotypes.
So I talked about the girly interests. Yeah, I don't fit into that at all. And then Dolly daydreams. So the girls can only have inattentive ADHD and doodle quietly lost in thought. Combined ADHD is more common across the board, I believe. Right. Yeah. And then the manic pixie dream girls. So this isn't necessarily a neurodivergent thing, but it's like a movie and TV trope, a manic pixie dream girl. So you've usually got a strong male lead. They're going through a character arc. And then you've got some female character who's kind of carefree and free-spirited and messy and ethereal and all that. And that's your manic pixie dream girl. So think Zooey Deschanel and even Jennifer Aniston has played this kind of character a few times. Yeah. And I think it romanticizes that being absent-minded and not very responsible. But ADHD isn't an aesthetic. And if we're struggling with work and life admin and holding down a job and we're getting into debt and we're chronically overwhelmed, that's not cute. It's not an aesthetic. No. So I find that whole thing really two-dimensional and, it bugs me. And then the girl boss ADHD. So this is like you've got an entrepreneur who's a woman with ADHD usually, and they're super powered at certain things and real high achievers. So to me, I don't like that because all humans have got inherent value and we should be accepted and valued for who we are and not expected to have like super strengths, because neurodiversity is about social justice and equality. It's not about the capitalist dream. What do you think about those? Anything to add?
Yeah, as you're going through them, I just think, gosh, I suppose because I live and breathe this stuff, sometimes I'm like, wow, how do these still perpetuate? But you can see how they do. You really can. Like, I hate the way that the sort of manic pixie girl not only kind of, romanticizes it, but in a way, I almost want to kind of comment that it's almost a bit sexualized. It's kind of, it speaks largely to kind of men's fantasy and the way in which they want and expect us to show up in the world for them. And it kind of gives me an immediate PDA of like, I am not here in this world to please you. I'm not here to serve you. So the very kind of almost implication that there is a trope that kind of encapsulates this that people really buy into frustrates me. And the sort of what was the last one that you said there? My working memory.
The girl boss.
Again.
Super powered.
Okay. I suppose on paper I'd probably be described as an entrepreneur, but again, it's almost as if there's this standard expectation that, you know, females are not supposed to be these types of things. That again, I'm very reluctant to engage in, because I think, well, why can't a woman be an entrepreneur? But also, you don't have to be a girl boss to be an entrepreneur. You can just be a female entrepreneur. Like, there's nothing girl boss about it.
We don't need to gender that.
Why can't you be exactly that?
Oh, I saw this. I can't remember what it was on now, probably Facebook, but mumtrepreneur. Just no. Oh, that makes me want to puke.
Right, absolutely. And again, it just kind of gives people the impression that you need to have this, you know, these mad skills to be able to get to this thing. And even I've actually just used, you know, kind of incorrectly the term mad there, but these kind of wild skills that only a small percentage of girl bosses can have and ascertain. And I just think, gosh, how othering must that be for people that don't then connect with that, and then as a result of that, I think, well, God, I couldn't be an entrepreneur then because I don't have these super skills and strengths. And I just, they're so limiting for people, and yeah. So rigid. So.
And I know lots of entrepreneurs who outsource the bits of their work that they, and it's not within their interest or their skill set. Mm-hmm. No. I've got from Sam Warner, I shared the stereotypes with her, and she's another ADHD gender non-conforming woman like me in the Professional Speaking Association, and she's sent me a whole load more of these, so there will be a LinkedIn carousel coming out soon. But she mentioned the crazy cat lady, so talking about mad, yeah. So if we're so wild and ADHD and autistic that we can't fit the good wife kind of box, then we're going to grow old and lonely, except we won't be lonely because we'll be surrounded by our cats.
Exactly. And again, it kind of really speaks to, if you're not serving men in that very rigid way, suddenly you have to be so far into the spectrum of, well, you must be mad then. Excuse me, just because I don't want to fit into that box and serve another gender as my main existence on this planet, I have to be mad? That I don't like those options.
No. However, I did read that Enya lives on her own in a castle with just loads of cats and like people helping with the housework and stuff, and all on her terms. And I thought, that's not crazy.
Yeah, that is simple and amazing. Does that make a crazy cat lady? No, it does not. Absolutely not. And I think we need to be really embracing these preferences as preferences. You know, there are so many different ways in which we all enjoy experiencing the world, and one specific way of that makes us crazy or not.
So Cynthia has also added that when we use gendered language like princess and queen, it implies certain aspects of gender expectations. Yeah, I know queen is used in a different context in the LGBT community as well. But yeah, I agree, but also the pretty and beautiful and stuff, rather than describing our ideas anything to do with how we think and behave, even like the impact that we make to society. We get too many comments about how we look. And I know that's a general feminist thing rather than to do with neurodiversity. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's about gender expectations and that gender stereotype and conditioning. And yes, absolutely, I agree, Cynthia. We could be warriors, adventurers and courageous. And I'd much rather have all of those things.
And actually, we are. Not even, why can't we be? We are.
Yeah.
That's amazing. And Daniel's talking about breaking language patterns in some of the different events. And yes, I have been to them, and they're some of my favourite things ever.
Drag events, cultural disruption in harmony and style. So yeah, celebrating breaking the gender boundary and deliberately. Yeah, I love it.
Me too.
So I just wanted to conclude that swapping male stereotypes for female ones is unhelpful. Mm-hmm. And actually, neurodivergence is broader and messier, and it's about human uniqueness. And we need to listen to lived experience from more women and gender expansive people, and with other marginalizing characteristics as well. We need to appreciate the whole cocktail of human experiences, in my mind, because we are all unique, and we're each the product of our characteristics that we're born with and the ones that we acquire as we go through life experiences. And that diversity is a beautiful thing. So let's hear more of that from the person-first accounts with the lived experience and less of the generalizations, please.
Beautifully put.
Do you have anything to add?
Just that if anyone ever has a strong reaction to anything, like, for instance, a gendered assumption or a stereotyping conversation, or notices anything coming up like that, I always encourage people to get curious and say, oh, that's interesting. And think about what that brings up for in you and the space that you're in, and use that as an opportunity to explore how things could be different, or whether or not there's something within your own perception that could do with a bit of a shift. We're all on a learning journey, and we're humans, and that means that we're all going to make mistakes, and that's okay. So
absolutely,
use this opportunity to go, oh wow, I didn't know that, or oh gosh, I got that wrong, thank you for helping me see a different perspective. And I think looking at
that's so powerful. We need to be teachable, but we need to not be afraid to open our mouths, because, as long as we are trying to treat fellow human beings with dignity and respect, if we get things a little bit wrong, but we're teachable, then we will evolve and grow.
I couldn't agree more.
So thank you so much for joining us, Beth. And this was great. This will be on our YouTube and Facebook and LinkedIn as usual. And next month, I think Tony will be back. Maybe we'll have another guest. If anyone wants to suggest any more topics, please do. We've always got our email address. So if you want to add to the conversation or suggest topics, please email us. I'll just share it in the chat. neurowomennatter@gmail.com. And we hope to hear from you. And please do tell us if you want it to be credited to you by name or kept confidential. I've been gathering some examples of women who have been discriminated against in the workplace and then had to sign non-disclosure agreements. It's super important. I know that when you share stories, if you want them to be anonymous and confidential, that they are. So thank you very much, and we'll see you next month.
Thank you.
Bye.